Are you not entertained?
Get busy living, or get busy dying. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us.
Welcome to this week's edition of Taboo Talk with Jay Louder. This week, this is a spontaneous week. I got to tell you what happened. So first of all, my sister was in town seeing my mom and dad, and she came by the office really to see my wife. And the thought came up, she would be a great guest for a podcast. Now, many of you recognize her daughter, Caitlin. Caitlin did a podcast with me. Oh gosh, I don't know. It's been several months ago. You may remember her story. She's in a dating relationship that really went viral. And she's actually doing mission work, and she is with YWAM. Right now she is in
Mongolia.
In Mongolia. So many of you will be familiar with Alara's daughter, Caitlin. Obviously, Alara's my sister. We've always been extremely close. And another side note on this is we started this podcast about 20 minutes ago, and I didn't hit the record button. So not only are we spontaneously doing a podcast, we hit the first 20 minutes that is nowhere to be found because I didn't hit the record button. But really, really excited to have my sister on today. Alara, welcome to Taboo Talk.
Thank you, Jay. I appreciate it. What a treat.
Yeah, it's really great. You know, recently we've had so many different guests, and we've had pro football players, and we've had bass fishermen, and we've had counselors, and we've had people that have been through therapy, and we've had people that have been sexually abused. And so we really try to bring a broad array of different guests from different backgrounds. And again, Alara was kind of an unsuspecting guest today, but really I think a great guest. And I think for several different reasons. Alara's got an incredible backstory about how she came to Christ. Alara went through some really challenging times in her younger years, which I think our younger audience will really appreciate. And then Alara, we'll get to this eventually in the podcast, but Alara had an incredible miracle that took place. And I can't wait to open up that can as well. And I know some of you listening today, you need a miracle. Matter of fact, you may be praying for one. Maybe you're in a huge conflict right now, or maybe it's a health crisis or financial crisis or a relationship crisis, and you're needing God to intervene. Maybe you believe that God doesn't even do miracles anymore. I grew up being taught that miracles were something that God did, that Christ did in the New Testament days to as evidence of him being the Messiah. And so for a long time, I thought those miracles were just something of the past. But I now know God still does miracles. And I believe that maybe today you're listening at home or driving down the road because God wants to use Alara and this story, this podcast, to help you realize that God has not forgotten you and that great things are ahead. So Alara, let's start off on the basics here. Tell our audience today how you came to faith in Christ.
Okay, I was about 10 years old, and it was in the summertime. And of course, we were brought up in a Christian home. Mom and dad loved the Lord and took us to church. And so, you know, that had been a part of our upbringing from the get-go. And so anyway, but I was 10 years old at the time, and Mom brought up at lunch, she was like, would you want to ask Jesus to come into your heart? And I was like, oh, yeah, no, not right now. No, I don't think so. And so I went on with my day, but it was something that was in the back of my head. Now I know that it was the Holy Spirit that was prompting my heart at the time, but I thought about it. And of course, I knew that Jesus had died on the cross for my sins, and I knew that I was a sinner, but I just had never come, you know, to the Lord and asked Jesus to come into my heart. So it was just like it was there all day. And then the next thing you know, I was like, Mom, yes, I do want to ask Jesus to come into my heart. So she took our oldest sister, her room is off of my mom and dad's kitchen. And so she had a little sitting couch in there. And so Mom and I went in there. We knelt next to the sitting couch. And so I followed Mom in a prayer and asked, you know, told the Lord that, Lord, I know that I'm a sinner and I know that I need a Savior. I want Jesus to come into my heart. I want a personal relationship with him. And I asked Jesus to come in, and I'll never forget. It was the sweetest thing, because it was like, I just felt so new inside. And I remember feeling light as a feather and just running through the house, you know, feeling so different and just knowing that was so real for me in that moment. And so that was when I received Jesus.
So I'm presuming that since you became a believer, everything in your life has been perfect ever since, and you've never had any issues. And of course not.
Absolutely not. No.
But you know what? I think some people may be wondering, and I know there are people who listen to this podcast and they're not believers. let's kind of maneuver here. So about the impact that faith has had on your life. Many people have heard me talk about you. Even as recently as 2 weeks ago, I was speaking to a youth group and I was telling them about the cost of following Christ and used you as an example that when you were in high school, that because you didn't live your life the way a lot of other people live, that there was a price tag involved in that. And sometimes you were on the outside looking in, and sometimes you weren't in the popular crowd, but it never shook your faith. And again, many people have heard me talk about that, how I've always respected the fact that you never backed down. You were never arrogant. You weren't one of those Christians that know everything and trying to shoot everybody else down and using the Bible as a weapon. That was never you. But you always had a compassion for other people. You were always unashamed to take a stand. And so that really has, I mean, honestly, it's been a huge inspiration for me. People have heard me say that I wish I was a lot more like you. So,
the thing about it is, Jay, you know, it wasn't easy, and there is a price tag. And I think sometimes, you know, people do think, oh, well, you know, I've got saved now, so everything should be perfectly, you know, fine, perfectly great. Life goes on and it's just going to be wonderful. But it doesn't always, you know, life does have its challenges, even as Christians. And it is a walk. It's a daily walk. But the thing about it is I did go through a time of being in the in crowd early in high school. My faith with the Lord continued from there. I just got, you know, closer to the Lord. But when I got into high school, I was part of the in crowd. But then they started making choices of lying to the parents and going to parties and do those kind of things. And I just didn't want to do that. And I just told them, I was like, no, you know, I don't want to, I'm not going to do those things. Well, eventually, you don't get invited to those things anymore. And so I wasn't part of the in crowd and went without, you know, being invited to things and not having a lot of friends. And so especially, you know, going in my high school, I really didn't have any friends. I had a few friends at church, obviously, but I sure didn't at high school and in my high school years. And so it was, gosh, I guess it was about my sophomore year in high school whenever the Lord had put Charles, my boyfriend, in my life at that time. But I really had no other friends because I had taken a stand.
Yeah. And many of you know what it feels like to be the last one picked. And it's difficult when you're on the outside looking in. And I relate to that, even though I didn't get saved till I was 21. A lot of my old buddies didn't want to hang around me anymore. I wasn't no longer the cool guy. I wasn't invited to go on the hunting trips that I used to be invited in. I was kind of an outcast. So I relate to that. And I think it's important, especially for the younger generation, because a lot of times you don't hear that on TV, that you hear TV preaching, that there is a cost of following Christ. And sometimes that's being misunderstood. Sometimes that's being criticized because really you don't fit in. You're in many ways, you are not an outsider. You're swimming upstream against the flow, but you were always willing to do that. And I always respected that. And I would just say this, excuse me. I would say if you're listening, those of you that are listening to the podcast today, you know, it would be good to take an inventory and to ask yourself, what has following Jesus cost me? Because the truth of it is the greater surrender, the greater the cost. And it should be costing all of us something. And that's not just, of course, Alara's talking about in her younger years, but that applies to even businessmen. That applies even later on in life and we saw this with mom and dad, where mom and dad always took a stand for Christ. Yes, and dad was a big businessman, and dad was oftentimes also not invited to some of the different things. He was criticized for some of the decisions that he made because they were contrary to the philosophy of the world. So there is a price tag involved in it. And even Jesus said that, you know, when you look at Jesus preaching, he even tells that analogy. He says, nobody goes to war without first evaluating how many soldiers they have and how many the enemy has. And he further explains it and says that no one builds a house without first counting the cost to find out what does it cost. Because Jesus said, you don't want to begin building and not be able to finish it. And you were always somebody that finished it. And I always loved that and respected that about you. And I remember those days when there was some hurt in your life because you were ostracized. And those of you that know Laura, I mean, not saying this because she's my sister, but I mean, she's beautiful. She's got a great personality. I mean, she's really the kind of girl that you would have thought had a date every weekend. But again, that's part of following Christ. Now let's kind of translate here and maneuver into when you did begin dating, because it's pretty amazing. Most people can't say they've only dated one person who became their spouse. And you guys have been married how long now?
We've been married 29 years this October. So we're...
Wow. Yeah, almost three decades. Well, tell our listeners today a little bit about how you met Charles?
Well, actually, Charles was one of your closest friends whenever you, after you got saved. And so y'all started street witnessing together. And so I guess I was probably almost 13. I remember y'all being having a Bible study night, the night that it was my 13th birthday, actually. But you had a group of guys that would go out and street witness. And Charles was one of those guys. And so we'd known Charles for, gosh, a long time. He, even when you were out going and preaching in different cities and everything, even early on, he would come by and he would say hi to mom and dad. He would, you know, he just was one of your good friends. And anyway, so mom and dad were asked by the youth director at church if they would be willing to have a men's Bible study at their house on Wednesday nights during the week. And I was about 15 at this point. And Charles had heard about it at church and said, you know, started coming. Well, he obviously was coming to say hi to mom and dad, but the more he started coming, the more he started coming early and we would talk and the conversation kind of started coming my way. And of course, you were seeing him when you would come back into town and that kind of thing. So, you know, I already was comfortable with Charles because he was one of your good friends. Right. And so we really just, our friendship grew, obviously, from the time that he started coming to the men's Bible study and we started talking on a regular basis.
Yeah, well, I had met Charles, as you stated, when I got saved, I started going to the local student union. I lost all my friends, and so I was needing some new friends, and I met Charles, and I don't remember, he had some position there at the student union. He was a respected guy, and I really didn't know him until he showed up that very first night when we were all going to go out and go street witness and sharing the gospel on the streets of downtown Wichita Falls. But Charles and I began to become friends, and he's somebody that I trusted. He's somebody that I knew was sincere in his faith, and, you know, mom and dad liked Charles, and so it just seemed to be, and I noticed, you know, y'all talking on occasion, but at that time, what, 7 years difference, is that right?
No, actually about 5.5 to 6 years.
Okay, difference. So about 6 years. So when your sister's 13, 14, 15, you certainly are not thinking about her dating a guy 21. I mean, 6 years is not that big of a deal if you're 30 and they're 24, but it's another ball game at that age. And so I really never gave it any thought. And then one night we were on the streets of downtown walking up and down the bars, you know, sharing the gospel with people. And I just flippantly, it wasn't like something that was premeditated by any stretch, but I just said, you know, Charles, my family really likes you. And I've seen you and my sister talking again, not that I thought there was anything there romantic, but I said, have you ever thought about, you know, maybe you and my sister are maybe one day dating? And I wasn't necessarily talking about today, or I hadn't really thought it through. And I could tell that by the look on his face that he was super caught off guard. Now, Laura, why don't you tell our listening audience why he was so caught off guard?
Right. Well, actually, his mom, of course, knew that he was coming over for Bible study. And I'm sure, I guess he was mentioning me at times. And so she said, well, not knowing really the age difference, she was like, why don't you ask Alara out? He was like, oh, absolutely not. There's no way. I mean, I know that there is an age difference. And not only that, that's Jay's sister. And so there is no way I would ever ask her out unless Jay said something to me about it. That would be the only way that I would ever be willing to do that. And so the night, Jay, that you asked him that, his jaw hit the floor because literally he was like, I mean, you got to be kidding me. That was exactly what I'd prayed for. And then here Jay was saying, why don't you ask, why don't you ask my little sister out? So he couldn't believe it.
Yeah. And I don't remember if it was at that moment or if it was a week later or 2 weeks later, it's been too long, but I do remember. And it may have been that night, but I do remember him telling me at some point that very thing, that he had thought about it, but knew there was a big age difference and that he had prayed that if that was to be God's will, that I would mention it. But I also remember he was extremely concerned about, and understandably, what my dad would think because of the age gap. And I remember kind of arrogantly telling him, which again, not that I had any influence over my dad, but I said, let me take care of dad. And I do remember, I don't remember the words that were spoken, but I do remember approaching mom and dad and saying something about that I had brought up to Charles and that I knew there was a big age gap, but that I'd brought it up and that he seemed somewhat interested and that Charles was somebody that I had the utmost trust in. And so
Well, and Jay, if you remember, mom and dad actually were 15 and 21. And I think, you know, that's part of God's providence, because mom and dad were okay with the fact that we were dating. And I think it was because that we started our dating relationship then, because the fact is that they had also started dating and got married. I mean, mom was like 16 when they got married, because back then, you know, they did get married earlier and that type of thing. But they started dating when mom was, you know, 15, dad was 21. And so they understood that God's hand can be in a situation. And so sure enough, they were on board with it. And so Charles and I started dating October 1st of 1988 and then got married October 1st of 1994. So we dated for 6 years. From the time that we started dating.
Well, not only did y'all date, but again, those of you that heard me talk about Alara, which I've done numerous times over the years, you know, Alara was able to do something that I didn't do. And of course, I didn't come to Christ till I was 21, as I already said. But Alara, you were able, I mean, tell our listeners, not only did y'all get married, but y'all got married as virgins.
Yes, we sure did. Charles was a virgin and I was a virgin on our wedding night. It was so awesome because he really wanted to protect me all those years. I mean, here we dated for 6 years. He was older than me, but he always had my best interest at heart. He always wanted to protect me. And so we dated for 6 years and from the very first date that we had. And so it was I was so grateful that, you know, we waited for all those years, but it was so well worth the wait. And to the fact that, you know, it was a testimony to even our own kids. And now I'm even seeing, you know, with my daughter, Caitlin, as, you know, she's been on here and talked to you, that they're even, you know, they've been dating for almost 2 years and they're waiting, and actually they haven't even kissed. And so that's, you know, but it's so neat that because of Charles and our testimony of waiting, that now that's even affecting the next generation. And so that's been a real blessing for us.
Well, and I'm sure, I mean, let's be realistic here. And it's so amazing that you guys both, you know, y'all held, held out and y'all were virgins, but that doesn't mean it was easy either.
Absolutely not. Yeah. No.
And you know, that's the thing. Maybe you're listening today and maybe you've got a checkered past. Maybe you're like me and you can't say, well, you know, you'd have to admit that you made a lot of mistakes along the way, as I did. And of course, one of the benefits of that is not only does God honor the faithfulness, but you don't go into a relationship with all the baggage that a lot of other people carry in there. And maybe you're going, gosh, I wish that would have been my story. I wish I would have remained pure. But that doesn't mean that because mistakes have been made in the past, that change can't begin today, that things can't turn around today. And I think it's important for you to remember as well that what God has forgiven, God has forgotten, and nobody else has the right to hold against you mistakes that you've made in the past. Maybe you're involved in a relationship right now and you're a believer and some boundaries have been crossed and maybe there's some guilt or shame or regret. Well, again, it's not too late to make a new commitment to one another and to Christ and to keep that relationship pure. Amen. I mean, there's so many, sin is sin for sure. But it always seems that sexual sin always seems to carry, in some ways, a greater weight. It doesn't mean, again, sin is sin, but sometimes the baggage of that can be so, so difficult. And, you know, so it's just important to remember that there can be a new beginning, that there is grace, and that there is mercy. And I recall one time when I was at that same student union where I met Charles, there was an open discussion about dating. And one person had got up and said that, they were a virgin and they would never marry somebody who wasn't a virgin, which quite frankly, when I heard that, I was kind of offended by it because I thought, who are you to hold this against someone else? And then another person got up and I so appreciated and respected when they said, you know, I'm a virgin as well. And they weren't trying to be combative or shoot the other person down, but they just said, I don't have the same conviction. I hope to marry a virgin, but I realize that there's a good possibility that I won't. But if God has forgiven them for any mistakes, regardless of what it is, who am I to hold that against them? So, you know, we've all made some mistakes and some of us have made greater mistakes in some areas than others, but it's never too late. A whole new life begins in one day, in one decision, in one moment.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you mentioned providence earlier, Alara, and I think that's, you know, it's a big word, but it's so important. And providence meaning that it's God orchestrated,
yes,
that it's God put it together. And you had that assurance. when sometimes we force things, we try to manipulate things. And when it's especially a relationship, when you see where God has brought the pieces of the puzzle and you know God has put it together, it takes away so many fears and apprehensions and doubts. And for you and Charles both, for him to have been praying that, you know, I don't know if this is God's will or not. If it is, Jay, I'll say something. And you know, it's just so obvious how God brought all this together.
Absolutely. And, you know, also, because the thing about it was, is that, you know, I did have a heart to want to be obedient to the Lord growing up and didn't really go through times of, wild times or what have you. But when I was 14, I really made this commitment to the Lord. I said, you know, Lord, I really want to date just the right guy. I don't want to date a bunch of people. I really just want to date the one that you have for me. I didn't know I was praying for my husband. I just was praying and wanting to commit my heart to be willing to wait for a godly guy that loved the Lord that would treat me like a princess. And so I truly was just praying with a sincere heart, saying that I wanted to wait for the guy that the Lord, you know, wanted me to date. And so I had already put that within my heart at a young age at 14. I didn't even really know what I was praying. I just knew that I had a heart to want to be obedient and to wait for a godly guy.
Well, and that says a couple of things. Number one, in the process of praying for that, not only were you praying for the preparation of your future mate, but inadvertently, you were also preparing your own self. See, sometimes that's what prayer is. Sometimes it's not so much about changing circumstances as it is changing or preparing you.
Right.
And that's a great word for people that are listening today. I don't care whether you're a grandparent, a parent, or maybe you're not even married. If you're a grandparent or a parent, you ought to be praying for your kid's future spouse now.
Yes.
Praying for their spouse and praying for your own kids, that God would be preparing not only their future spouse, but your kids as well. If you're a person who's not married, asking God to guide you, to lead you, to direct you. You can use the word providence to providentially arrange things and bring that person in your life. You might be saying, well, gosh, there's nobody on the horizon. You might even be saying, I haven't had a date. I think about just a few months ago, I was speaking to 15,000 students at a college. And so many students came up and wanted to talk to me about relationship issues. And maybe that's where you're at. And maybe, you know, you're praying for, you're wanting a relationship. But maybe now's the time for you to be praying that God gets you ready and that God deals with the things in your life so that you're prepared for that person. I just believe that prayer that you prayed and the fact that even Charles was praying is part of why there's been the blessing on your marriage. And again, it's not that your marriage or anybody, and there is no perfect marriage, but you guys have been married now almost 30 years. Matter of fact, I celebrate 30 years this Saturday.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah, man, I'm excited. But, you know, that whole process was as a result of you humbling yourself before God and saying, God, I want your will in my life. And maybe right now you're in a toxic relationship. Maybe you're like some of the students that I talked to, even as recently as a couple of weeks ago, where I had students that also were talking to me. These weren't even college students. These were high school students that were talking about some of the issues that were going on in their relationships. And maybe you're in a relationship right now with a person. Maybe they're a good person, but they're not drawing you closer to Christ. They're not motivating you to become a stronger believer. Well, now it's time to take that inventory and ask God, am I in the right relationship? And God, I'm willing to cut any ties. I'm willing to sever any relationships to be with the person that you want me to be with. I truly believe with this with all my heart that God has a specific person picked out for everybody.
Yes.
And some people will say, well, if it's God's will, it'll happen. Well, that sounds good, but that's not always true because we have a will our own selves and we can follow God's will or not. Or maybe, hey, let's just go this route. Maybe you're a person who would say, gosh, man, I don't relate to that because not only was I not pure in my dating life, but I'm in the process of a divorce or my husband or my wife has walked out on me. Hey, I want to say the same thing to you. There is healing regardless of where you've been. And there's a new start regardless of where you've been. And there is a God who sees every tear, every wound, every scar. And God is the one who can make what's crooked straight. And so don't give up hope and begin to ask God and pray to God and believe that He wants to guide and direct your life. Sometimes it's not the fact that God can't direct your life. It's that we're not allowing Him to do so. So you guys, y'all got married and y'all have three kids. And as we said, almost 30 years. Your daughter, Caitlin, who again, we've already referenced, who's been on this podcast. If you haven't listened to it, I encourage you to go back. It's a phenomenal story. Caitlin's on the mission field again with YWAM. So let's talk about something happened that is just remarkable, tragic, and yet a great miracle that happened in your life recently. And I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast that you may today, this may be the main reason you're listening, because you are needing God in a supernatural way. And the truth of it is, maybe you're driving down the road or sitting at home and you've lost all hope. I mean, it's as though if God doesn't get involved in my situation, it will never be made right. Well, let me first of all tell you, you're in a good position, because God says it's through our weakness that we become strong. And the greatest miracles always arise. Now, listen to this. The greatest miracles always arise out of the greatest difficulties. I can prove that. Think about the New Testament. The night that Jesus walked on water came as a result of a huge storm. We can go on and on. A woman caught in adultery, one of the greatest displays of forgiveness, came on the heels of a woman literally caught in the act of adultery. I mean, the miracle of the catches of fishes happened all night long after they came up zero. So one of my all-time favorites is when Jesus fed the 5,000. Again, came on the heels. It always comes on the heels of a problem. So, Alara, let's kind of tell our listeners about this unbelievable miracle. Kind of set the stage for what happened. I guess that's been almost 2 years ago.
Actually, it was July the 20th of 2020. So the pandemic had just come about, and it was that summer. And here in Texas, things had really shut down. In fact, you know, you couldn't, if you had a loved one that was in the hospitals for really any reason, you could not go up there with them. That was when you were able to drop people off and literally like see them walk through the doors and not see them until they came out. You know, it was really a scary time because of the pandemic. But our family had decided to go to Colorado because Colorado was not as closed as what Texas was. And so we thought, okay, we'll get away. We'll do a little bit of camping for a few days. And then there was a condo that we had stayed in, Keystone. We had stayed a couple of years before, and we absolutely loved that condo. The kids knew it backwards and forwards. And so we thought, you know, this would be a great little family get together. We'd go by ourselves because, you know, at that time there was just so many wearing the masks and all that kind of thing. So we just thought, okay, this will be a time. We didn't know if it was going to be one of those things that we wouldn't be able to go on vacation, you know, after that, because of all of the craziness going on with COVID and everything. So we took off to Colorado. And so we had gone camping for a couple of days, and then we were supposed to arrive at the condo. And it was on July the 20th when we got there. So we got there, and the way, for those of you that have not been to Keystone before, Keystone is a really neat little Colorado town. But it's set in the trees because obviously it's up in the mountains. And so our condo was up in the mountains, and the parking lot was quite a ways from the actual condo. So we were unloading and getting all the food and everything. And so I was already in the condo and unloading food, and the kids and Charles were back at the vehicle and unloading it and everything. And so I'm just up there, you know, so excited. We just arrived and everything was so nice and cool. And back in Texas, it was burning up. So we were just getting there and just getting situated, and Caitlin had come up, and she was like, "Mom," she said, "Dad dropped one of the containers and all the Cokes are busted." And I was kind of frustrated about that, and I was like, "What is going on?" Well, in a few minutes he comes up and they completely unloaded everything, and he's like, "Something, I think I pulled something in my chest, and so I'm going to go in there and take a shower." And so the kids kind of went everywhere, they went different directions in the condo, and I was still unpacking things. And so here in a few minutes, he got out of the shower. And so he was in there laying on the bed, and he just couldn't get comfortable. And I kept saying, "Honey, are you okay?" And he wasn't really saying much. And so anyway, all of a sudden he was like acting like his left arm, something was, you know, like it was. And I said, "Is everything okay with your arm?" And he said, "It's numb." And as soon as he said that, it was like a trigger went off in my mind, like, oh my gosh, is he having a heart attack? I said, "Right now, get your shoes on. We're going to the emergency room." So here
now,
we
wait just a minute. Charles had never had any health problems at all, had he not?
Absolutely not. No, he had not had any heart issues. Now, his dad had died at 63 from a heart attack, but Charles was 53. So, you know, that was not something that we were like thinking, oh, we needed to really, you know, I mean, he'd never had any issues whatsoever. So here we're literally, I'm getting him up off of the sofa going, okay, let's go. So he puts his shoes on and we head out the door. Well, the kids were at the condo and we said, okay, I'm taking dad. We'll be back. We're just going to go get him checked out. So he walks down to the parking lot and it's a good little ways, but he walked himself down to the parking lot. We got into the vehicle and I was driving. And so here we start out the winding road out of the trees, off of the parking lot to head out. And so you have to get out on this major road. Well, we were winding through the trees of the parking lot and all of a sudden it's like, I mean, literally like a shotgun was shot into his chest and he grabs his chest. Well, I am just like, oh my gosh, what's going on? Well, we are coming up on the area to the light to get onto the major highway, but right there was where you would turn in, and that was where the condo office was. And here my mind was just racing.
I bet.
And I was like trying to get up to where people were. And I could see all the cars passing up above me on the main road, but we were down in the trees right there by the condo office. And I thought, if I can just get somewhere. So I speed up. Now, this is all, I mean, in a matter of seconds. I race up right there in front of the condo office. I throw on the brakes and I go, Jesus, Jesus, help me. I don't know what to do. And immediately I hit the Bluetooth in the vehicle 911, and the 911 dispatch comes on. And of course, she's asking me questions about, you know, where are we? And I just knew that she could figure it out if I just had hit 911. So she starts asking me questions and I'm screaming, trying to figure out, because he literally is not breathing next to me at this point. He has gone into cardiac arrest. And so I jump out of the car. She's still talking to me and I can't even focus. And the next thing I know, I am pulling his whole body out of the passenger seat onto the hot concrete, and all of his body parts fall into the ground because I'm having to pull his body out of the car because he's not breathing. And she's talking to me and asking me what kind of vehicle I'm driving. And I'm just like, please just get here. He's not breathing. And Jay, I started doing CPR once I got him on the ground.
Were you trained in CPR?
I had had a class 20 years before and honestly, it was like, I was the most out of control I've ever been, but the most in control. And I know it was Jesus. I knew it was God, because there was no way I knew to do what I was doing. And yet I was dragging his body out of the car. I was laying it on the ground. I started breathing and doing CPR, and I wasn't counting because I was screaming for help in between, but I was doing something I had not even, didn't even know what to do, but yet it was like the Lord was showing me and helping me to do what I was doing. He was beginning to turn blue at this point and gray, and I'm just screaming, dear God, you know, anybody, just somebody help me. And this went on for a good, you know, of course it seemed like to me forever.
Oh, sure.
But this dispatcher was still on the phone. And so nobody was around. So I kept doing compressions and still breathing. And like I said, I don't really know how many breaths or how many compressions, but I was screaming in the in-between. And all of a sudden I started seeing people behind me and I kept going, can somebody please help me? Well, now don't forget, this is in the middle of COVID. So people were leery anyway. And so they were like, we don't know what to do. And all of a sudden I'm sitting here. I never stopped doing the breaths and the compressions. And all of a sudden this tall 6'6" angel, his name was Daniel at the time. You know, talk about providence, but he comes over and he says, ma'am, my name is Daniel and I can help you. I said, Daniel, if I'll do the breathing, if you'll just do compressions. Cause I knew right at that moment with COVID, people were freaking out about having to help. So he was like, of course. So he started doing that and started helping me with that, because what we found out later is that the hospital, the closest hospital was 15 minutes away. So the EMT, it would have taken a good few minutes for, so here all of this is going on and praying and hoping, you know, somebody was going to come and help us. So he was doing the compressions.
Was he a nurse or anything?
He worked at the condo office, and there was another woman that worked at the condo office too, that they happened to have the defibrillator. And they brought the defibrillator and shocked him once.
What are they doing with a defibrillator? What is the odds of that?
Yeah, I mean, the condo office had a defibrillator.
That is crazy.
And so they did the defibrillator, but it didn't work. And of course,
I hang on. For those of us that are a little unfamiliar with a defibrillator, including me,
right?
What actually is that?
That's the machines that you'll see on all the paddles, shows.
The paddles,
okay, the shockers.
Okay, yeah.
And so that's what they did. They tried once and it didn't work. Well, within all the chaos and me screaming and, you know, so out of it and everything, and of course still trying to be enough within, you know, trying to help, the EMT finally gets there and they get out and start working on him, and a police officer gets there. Well, they make me stand really far, like really far off from Charles. Now, he's not been breathing. I don't even know how many minutes at this point that it took for them to get there, and he's still not breathing. And, you know, I literally, during that time, I saw his eyes completely set. I mean, y'all, he was not there. The eyes were open, but nobody was home.
Yeah.
They were completely set. I remember looking into his eyes and nobody was home. I mean, he had completely stopped breathing and he was not there. He had completely turned gray.
Did it hit you that, like, at the time, I know you're not thinking completely clearly, but are you thinking he's gone? Are you thinking my husband's dead?
Your mind is racing with so many different thoughts. Like, I'm thinking in that moment of doing compressions and screaming, like, you can't die. We have three children. You won't be able to walk our daughter down the aisle. I mean, these are crazy thoughts,
right?
But your mind is racing of all the different things. And so I am just like, this can't be happening. This is an out-of-body experience.
Right.
And there's not anything I can do at this point besides just until they get there. So they're getting there. They're working on him. And they make me stand so far away from him. I guess if he doesn't start breathing again, you know, and me not being in the way. So I'm over there standing, and they made Daniel, bless his little heart, he was trying to keep me calm, and he would stand over there and hold me back. And I was talking out loud because I was freaking out. He's sitting, laying over there, and I don't know how much longer it's going to be that they're going to stop working on him, because I'd already been working on him for so long.
Is the cops now working on him, or who?
It's the EMT.
The EMT was actually
working on him, but Daniel was holding me back. And so I'm begging God at this point, going, God, please just spare his life. Please just save him. Just save him. And so I'm saying all of this out loud, so everybody that was around was hearing every thought that was in my head at that moment, because I am spewing every bit of it out. So at this point, I'm begging God for my husband's life. Just, Lord, we've got children. There's so much more life to live here. Please, God, please spare him. And I remember in my mind thinking, you know, how much longer are they going to be willing to work on him? But I was like, it was like a shift in a moment. And it was like all of a sudden, the Lord gave me the verse that says, you will live and not die and declare the works of the Lord. And it was like in that moment, I shifted from begging God to declaring that you're going to raise up, that you are going to live. It was like my faith in that moment rose up and I started screaming, you will live and not die and declare the works of the Lord. And I screamed it over and over and over. I probably screamed it 10 times. And I'll never forget, there was a woman that was standing over there on the sidelines, and she comes over and she says, ma'am, here's a bottle of water. We're praying for you. I said, ma'am, everybody that can hear my voice, and believe you me, they could hear it, because I was going to make sure Charles heard it because he was dead on the ground. And I said, every person that can hear my voice, I need for you to be praying and believing and speaking that he's going to raise up. And within just a minute, they asked me, they said, after I had probably screamed it out about 5 to 10 times, they said, what is his name? And I said, Charles. And they gave a thumbs up, and he had started breathing on his own. And so we were so excited. I just was so praising and thanking God. And I think everybody around us was just in awe of being able to see this whole situation unfold. They loaded him up and put him in. They wouldn't let me ride in the ambulance, and so I had to follow behind in a car. Now, mind you, our kids are back at the condo.
No idea what's going on.
Have no idea what's going on. But come to find out, I found out later that my kids had heard an ambulance and had never correlated the sirens that they heard that was for their father.
Wow.
And they had no idea. That never even dawned on them that that could have even possibly been the case. But thank God they were not there, and that somehow, because Charles will tell you to this day, he doesn't remember us even arriving at the condo. When they were unloading all of the groceries and everything and hauling all of the stuff into the condo, he already didn't remember. His body was already having some kind of effects, because he's like, I don't remember anything from the time that we had arrived, because we had just gotten to the condo. And from that time on is when his body started going into having a heart attack.
So what when they got into the hospital, what actually had happened? I mean, had he had a heart attack?
Yes, he had had a major heart attack in the Widowmaker, which they call it the Widowmaker because that's the one that you don't recover from. He had a 100% blockage. And so
what causes that? Is it genetics?
It can be genetics. What happens is it's basically a blood clot. He was completely, the artery in that heart, the Widowmaker, that artery, it completely clogs up. It's like something breaks off and it literally just blocks off. And since it was 100% blocked, when that blood vessel or whatever broke off, it completely shut down that area, that artery of his heart, and he was 100% blocked. So he went into cardiac arrest and he died. And so he came back to life. So they said that he had been probably without oxygen. He was literally, it was about 20 minutes that he went without oxygen. They say after 8 minutes that you pretty much won't make it back after that, that you would be the oxygen, since you have no oxygen from 8 minutes on, then you would be a vegetable.
Right.
And so God,
if you live, you would be brain dead. Yeah.
And so wound up that he not only came back to life, but they got him to the hospital, and then they had to care flight him from the little hospital that was 15 minutes away to Denver. And so I had to then drive an hour away after telling my kids that their father had had a heart attack and died and then came back to life, and that now I have to make the trek to Denver, and which was an hour away from Keystone. So I got back to the condo after they had care flighted him to Denver and had that conversation with the kids and what had happened. And I'll never forget, because this was during COVID and I didn't know if they would allow one, even me in the room, much less my kids. And so I didn't know what to do, if we should get a hotel in Denver or keep the kids there at Keystone. And I'll never forget Caitlin. She was 17 at the time. She said, Mom, you're going to go and take care of Dad, and I'm going to stay here with the boys. And so my kids stayed back. It was the hardest decision I had to make, to leave my babies back an hour away from where we were going to be at the hospital in Denver. But I left them there with Caitlin taking care of her and the brother, while I had to go to Denver and take care and go to the hospital. Charles would have had to have two stents put in to his heart. And when I got there, I walk in, he's in intensive care in the cardiac unit, and he was like, he was fine. He was awake.
Like it never happened.
And so my prayer on the way there was like, Lord, of course, I praise the Lord for an hour just praising God for what I had just experienced, this incredible miracle of my husband dying before me. And that because of my prayers and because of believing by faith that he could raise from the dead, that I had seen this incredible miracle. So I praised him all the way to the, but I also asked him, I said, Lord, I pray that when he leaves the hospital, that he would walk out better than he went in. And 4 days later, he walked out of the hospital. And so it's truly a miracle story of what God did for us in that summer vacation of July the 20th, 2020, where Charles died and came back to life. So
And he's completely healthy now. I mean, it's like, I mean, I was with him Easter. I mean, you would never know anything's ever even happened.
Actually, in fact, he did cardiac rehab once we got back. And that was the crazy thing about it. Here we went on this vacation, and then 5 days, he was in the hospital for 4 days. But he walked out of the hospital 4 days later, and then we drove home and went through, because we live in the Metroplex in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and we came through Wichita Falls, and everybody, the whole family met us at Mom and Dad's house, and you would have never known that anything had even happened. I mean, he looked normal and everything was great. That's the miracle of it. Here, he went without oxygen for 20 minutes, and God so healed him to the point that he was perfectly fine, has not had any other issues. Cardiac rehab went great, no issues, and he's doing great to this day.
I want to zero in on a few things that you said that maybe you're listening today and you go, man, that's an incredible story. It's amazing. Thank God. But there's a few things that you said that I really want to zero in. The first thing is this. You said you were at a place where there was nothing you could do. I just can't help but wonder how many people today, and obviously it's probably not a heart attack, but they're in some scenario that where they're going, there is nothing, excuse me, that I can do. There's no way I can fix this problem. There's no way I can solve it. There's no way I can get out of this dilemma like you were. But there was something you could do. And you did the one thing that you could do. And that was literally that you cried out to God. And for those of you that are listening right now, maybe right now, the only thing, maybe you don't feel like you can get out of bed. Maybe your world has come crashing down. And it may be that the only thing you can do is the one thing that you need to do. And that's what Alara did. She simply cried out to God, knowing that it was in his hands, knowing that if he didn't deliver, that all hope was lost, that her husband was going to be gone, that he would never be there to watch his kids, some of them graduate from high school, get married. Maybe the fact that you're there right now, maybe you're listening today because God has allowed you. I didn't say God brought you. Maybe the enemy brought you. Maybe you brought yourself to this place where there's nothing else you could do. Sometimes when you get there, it's the best place on earth because it's the place where you finally begin to depend on God. It's the place where now God can show up because you're inviting him into a situation. No money will fix it. No negotiations will fix it. Only God and God alone. And the great thing about that is when God does deliver, all credit goes to him. Alara doesn't take credit. She's not here saying that she saved her husband. Obviously, she took some steps that she should have taken, and those were good steps to take. But undeniably, unequivocally, Alara knows that if God had not pulled through, her husband would not be alive today. And so being there, if you're there right now, that is your hope. That is your hope that God has not forgotten you, that God has allowed you to get to this place because maybe you're going to see him in a way you've never seen him. I've got to believe with all my heart the night that the disciples were in that boat and they literally said, Jesus, do you not care that we are about to die? They would have never seen Jesus walk on the water had it not have been for the gale force winds and the storms. That another thing that you said, Alara, and I think to some people they're going to go, what? And it may sound a little bit crazy to you. Alara said that she spoke her faith. You know, there's a scripture in the Bible that says the power of life and death is in the tongue. We live in a world where we hear so much negative on the radio, on the internet, in the news. But the scripture talks about, speaking your faith, that the power is in what you say. And it's real easy to thank God for his deliverance after God has done something. But true faith is not thanking God after it's been done. True faith is thanking God before you see the results. Anybody can thank God after he's done something. But it's having the faith to proclaim your faith and to trust that God is going to do something, that you're able to see it before you can actually see it. And then Alara said something else that I think really, as we bring this podcast to a close, I think is a message that every one of us needs to hear. Alara said her husband came back to life. You know, I remember the night I got saved that the preacher quoted a verse that he that has the Son has life. And I remember when I heard that, I thought, I don't have a life. I have an existence. Yes, I'm breathing, but I don't have a life. Maybe you're in a place where your dreams have died. The relationship has ended. The marriage is on the rocks. Your health is deteriorating. You're in college and you feel like you're not going to be able to pass or graduate from college. I don't know what it is, but you're in that place where you feel like hope is lost. You feel like that all your dreams and hopes are dying. Well, the great thing is if you are willing to surrender to the God-man Jesus Christ, he brings dead things back to life. He brought Charles back to life. He wants to invade your life. God can bring everything that has died back to life. Are you willing to allow him to do it? You know, it's funny. We after Charles had this experience, we've referred to him as Lazarus. and many of you know the story. In John chapter 11. Where one of Jesus' close friends died. And Mary and Martha said, if you would have been here, if you only would have been here, he would have never died. And Jesus said, well, actually, he's not dead. He's sleeping. Now, obviously, he was dead. But what Jesus was saying is that I'm going to bring him back to life. And Jesus did the very thing. I just can't help but believe that there's people that are listening today, and you need God to bring something back to life. And you got to a place where maybe you feel like there's no hope. Well, today's story is living proof. There is a God who does miracles. There is a God who resurrects the dead, if we'll only allow him. You know, I think about Philippians 1:6, and it says, being confident. It didn't say being hopeful or being wishful. It says, I'm confident of this very thing, that he is God, that he who began a good work in you will perform it until the day of Christ. Alara, thank you for being not only an incredible example. You know, your older brother is supposed to be the example for you. And for much of my life, I wasn't that. But thank you for not only being a great example to me, being someone that I could, even though you were younger than me, being someone that I've always respected, I've always looked up to. We've had our differences. We've had our challenges as well. But I've always loved you and always respected you. Thank you so much. I'm so glad that today you stopped by the office. As we said at the beginning of the podcast, this wasn't planned, but I know it was God's will, because I know that many of you're in that place where you feel like there's nothing you can do. You feel like things are dying. And through a large story, you can see where, man, you speak your faith, where you pray, and God supernaturally does what no man can do, so that only he can get the credit. Laura, what a privilege.
Thank you, Jay. I appreciate this so much. This is such a blessing and a privilege for me to be able to do this. Oh my goodness, I'm just so grateful that, it was such a surprise to come in today and just on the spur of the moment for this to happen. And I feel so honored and blessed to be here and to do this. And so thank you so much for asking me to do so, and I love you so much.
Well, we've talked about providence all day, and it was providence that you've been here. Thanks for joining us on Taboo Talk. We'll see you next time.